Hello, welcome to The Signal. I'm Dylan Taylor.
And I'm Kate Berrio. We're journalism students in the audio workshop at the University of King's College.
Today on the show,
we feel very disappointed and we do feel very surprised.
Coming up, Halifax students react to the federal government's new international student cap.
And calling all artists, a new studio opens in Fall River.
Arts, I believe, are very important.
Hannah Vino will have that story.
But first, Halifax universities host around 12,000 international students every year. That may change in 2024. Earlier this week, the federal government announced a two-year cap on international students. It says the reduction should help reduce strain on Canada's housing and healthcare systems. Some Halifax international students say there could be side effects to this decision. Dylan Taylor has the story.
Ich bin Hannah. Hi, wie geht's?
That was German Dalhousie student Hannah von Berg introducing herself. International students like von Berg make up about a quarter of Dal's student body. As of this week, that will change.
We are steadying the numbers for the next 2 years so that we can make sure that international students can fully benefit from their time here in Canada and that our system is able to manage and handle them in the right ways.
The federal government is cutting their international student intake for 2024 by 35%.
This is part of what a responsible government must do to ensure immigration continues to function smoothly and Canadians continue to support it.
The cap is supposed to give the healthcare and housing systems some breathing room. Von Berg is skeptical.
Like, makes me really wonder about like what is going to be the selection criteria of that, and you know, are only people who have a lot of money or, like, you know, who have, like, connections, you're going to be able to enter the country. So that's, like, a lot of ethical questions that come with that, I think.
Hola, soy Natalia Tola, tengo 22 años y trabajo para la Federación Canadiense de Estudiantes.
That's King's grad, Natalia Tola. She's from Ecuador and studied here as an international student. Now, she works for the Canadian Federation of Students.
We feel very disappointed and we do feel very surprised.
Tola says the cap might drive up costs for universities and students too.
They have to oftentimes rely on international students to cover the gaps in this funding. And so if, you know, if there's a limit for how many international students can be enrolled, then that means that tuition will have to go up, not only for international students, but for domestic students too.
St. Mary's University did not respond to our requests for an interview. Dalhousie did respond with a written statement. It reads, in part,
Dalhousie is following the federal government's announcement of a temporary cap on certain international student permit applications with close interest. International students enrich our campuses and our communities, and our immediate focus will be to better understand the details and implications of today's announcement.
The cap will affect each province differently, but Ottawa hasn't spelled out how just yet. In some provinces, the cap may reduce the number of incoming international students by 50%. Universities will be seeing big changes over the next couple of years. Natalia Tola says their advertising strategies will have to change too.
Like, who's going to be the face in their pamphlets when schools brand themselves as diverse?
For The Signal, I'm Dylan Taylor.
The government's plans come into effect immediately. They'll be reconvening at the end of the year to determine the cap for 2025.
A garage in Fall River is home to a new art studio. Zen Rankin opened the art space in December 2023. The longtime artist says he wants to help young people prepare for the industry. Hannah Vino tells us more.
So, this is what I was working on this week. I was working on this illustration. And I do believe it's coming along really
the
well.
Art space looks like a garage from the outside, but when you enter, you can tell you are in an art studio. There are art supplies lining the walls, and kids doing a drawing class.
I do draw those circles so I can tell where the part of the leg is supposed to end and where the other part is supposed to be.
Zen Rankin is an artist by trade and teacher by choice. Rankin says he wants to encourage and support aspiring artists. After renovating the space for about a year, he was finally able to open the studio.
I am a freelance illustrator, and my wife is a graphic designer. We started a company together called Rankin Creative Incorporated, and we have been doing freelancing for over 15 years now together. working from home, regular clients, been making art for many years for fun, but also, you know, making money. Those are our skills. And we solve problems for people generally. We thought many years ago, around the time I started that business, I thought I would cut my teeth on teaching.
Rankin started to teach at schools and camps. It was a way for him to make money, but he also found the joy in it.
I decided to take ownership of my own skills of teaching recently, and I've always worked with people in institutions of teaching and advocating for art, but I thought, you know, it's about time I start taking ownership of my own skills and trying to build something of my own.
So by now, everyone should have an idea of what they want their character to look like.
Rankin finds ways to support students in any way possible. He offers online sessions to teach students no matter where they are in the world. Ava McKay works as a teaching assistant for Rankin's classes. She was looking for job opportunities, and this seemed like a good fit.
I've been interested in it since I was younger, but now I'm like getting back into it because I'm thinking in the future going into designing or fashion or something. I just love like seeing how like creative everyone is. I don't know, just like all the different ideas everybody has.
Gavin Roland is a longtime friend of Rankin's. Roland is a school teacher, and when thinking about teaching art, he decided to reach out to Rankin for help. Roland says that students were engaged when Rankin would come in and teach. He believes that what Rankin is providing through the art space is important.
The world's changing, and there's so many different avenues that art is becoming, art and things like graphic design, I think are really becoming important because everything's visual now. So if we're not teaching kids to help promote those learning skills for future jobs, then we're doing them a disservice. He's offering a lot of opportunities for art education.
Rankin's passion shines through the classes at the art space. He says that the school system doesn't always prepare students who might be interested in a career in arts.
Arts, I believe, are very important. School systems never really give the attention the arts deserve, and especially for teenagers and stuff like that. Becoming an artist or getting into the art field is rarely spoken about. And parents especially are usually left on their own to figure out what to do about getting their students into college and university and to begin having an art career. And so I just feel that that's insanely important to pass that along and help families and parents out with that sort of thing.
While supporting his students, Rankin says he likes to have fun. He wants his classes to be a place where students feel comfortable and encouraged.
I try to have a good time with the students and just enjoy, not overthink, just do express this kind of thing, like tap into that stuff. That's where I think the fun is at.
There was no lack of fun during the two-hour youth drawing class. The students were engaged while working on their own drawings. Student Olivia Judge likes the way the class is structured and how they are able to explore new skills.
Very open, and it's like just teaching you the skills instead of like, this is how you draw a super realistic step-by-step tutorial. I think this is good for like, because it teaches like, now I actually have to draw shoulders. It teaches you like the anatomy, which is good.
Another student, Leah Griatti, says she enjoys the friendly environment that Rankin has created.
Well, I really like the sense of community there. I feel like it's a really friendly space, really accepting. I feel really safe there.
Rankin says he is happy with how the opening of the studio has gone, but he is interested to see where they might be able to go in the future.
You know, I'm hoping, you know, we got a good reputation. I hope it just sort of becomes a regular thing locally, and I hope we can be a name that people recognize when it comes to representing students to help them build their potential in their portfolios and things like that.
This is just the beginning for the art space. Over the next few months, they will continue to offer new classes.
Okay,
here
we go.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Thanks for coming.
For The Signal, I'm Hannah Vino in Halifax.
The art space will be advertising new programming in the coming weeks. All information about classes can be found on their website, theartspace.ca. You're listening to The Signal on CKDU 88.1 FM in Halifax or Chibuktuk. You can also hear us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Just search The Signal, a Halifax podcast. We're bringing you stories from the audio workshop at the University of King's College. I'm Dylan Taylor.
And I'm Kate Barrio. Still to come on the show.
It seemed like a great opportunity to make it even more accessible and inclusive for folks.
Silence and skating are on the program at the Amara Oval. Victoria Zizinski-Shajanis will take us there.
And keeping it cozy with woolly memorabilia.
I kind of thought, like, what about Nova Scotia Agricultural College wool blankets?
Kaylee Stevens brings us along for the ride.
We need more Black social workers, and let's make it happen.
Bria Simons tells us about the new Afrocentric cohort program.
And did you know cold plunging groups are good for meeting people? It's just hard to break the ice. Molly McNaughton has the story.
The Amara Oval is a beloved skating spot for Haligonians. On a regular day, the sound of music and the chatter of the crowd fill the rink. But this lively noise can be limiting to some. Sensory skating is when people can escape the usual hustle and bustle to skate in a quieter environment. Victoria Zizinski-Shajanis has that story.
No music, no announcements, no shouting. In the silence of the afternoon, families gather for a peaceful skating session.
This is our first sensory skate, but I mean, I've been coming to the Oval since it opened. They've been coming to the Oval since they could stand on skates, I guess, basically.
I'm scared to do it because I don't really know how to do it.
The Amara Oval is an outdoor facility located on the Halifax Common. In the winter, it transforms into an ice rink open to the public.
It was amazing. We rented skates because we didn't have our skates sharpened. And that was really easy. And the people are lovely. And okay. And then we went on the ice and it was terrifying, but it was it was good.
The Amara Oval hosts weekly sensory-friendly skating every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. The program is meant to create an inclusive environment for people who identify with autism spectrum disorders, sensory processing disorders, or any other need. Ryan Nearing is a public affairs advisor for the Halifax Regional Municipality.
So one of the most notable differences that folks will recognize is that we're not playing any music, so it's a little bit of a quieter environment. Crowds tend to be smaller as well. We have our staff kind of on hand for any assistance that's required, and we do offer adaptive skating equipment at any time.
Autism Nova Scotia advertised a skating session for people with autism spectrum disorders. But for some families, it's the perfect time to enjoy the rink outside of the regular crowds.
It's nice after school to have this 4 o'clock program. They have them on Mondays and Thursdays. Just for my daughter, just because it's starting to get later out a little bit longer. And it's just sucks to just go home, right? It's nice to have something like this. Break up the week, right, Pickle?
Right.
I just like to skate, and it's an opportunity to get out with my granddaughter on Monday because it's a public day.
We want to go skating together, and it's the only day of the week that has it, like, the family skate at 4.
I probably will want to come back again because it's, like, way less people, so it's easier to skate.
Peace and space is what many people look for in sensory skating at the Amara Oval. For The Signal, I'm Victoria Brzezinski-Szadzianis.
The Amara Oval is hosting sensory skating every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. All information can be found online on the Halifax Regional Municipality website or on Autism Nova Scotia's website.
For almost 30 years, Dalhousie's agricultural campus has been using wool from their sheep to create lasting keepsakes for students and staff. Plus, they've made it a point to keep the production of these keepsakes local. Kaylee Stevens went to the Truro campus to learn more.
It's the 90s. The Nova Scotia Agricultural College, now known as Dalhousie's Agricultural Campus, has a flock of sheep and a surplus of raw wool. Farmers across the country are dumping their wool into landfills or the forest because it's just not selling. Luckily, an employee and student on campus has a plan. Hi, Gary. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Kaylee. How are you?
I'm doing great. Gary Wallace was Dalhousie's shepherd for 26 years before retiring and moving to Ireland with his wife. He saw the wool going to waste and wanted to think of a way to use it.
I had the idea about doing blankets. There was a mill in, a wool mill in Prince Edward Island, McCausland's, and they kind of had a long history of making wool blankets. And I kind of thought, like, what about Nova Scotia Agricultural College wool blankets?
Wallace knew the blankets would be easy to market. What, with all the students and alumni that have close connections to the school?
The college was active. They had an ice hockey team. And you know, you go to the arena, you'd want to sit on a wool blanket or as a lap warmer or whatever, you know?
But Wallace didn't just consider blankets. There was some research into using wool as insulation, mulch, and fertilizer, and Wallace had the idea of DIY wool knitting kits. In the end, though, the blankets were the success. Yeah. Jean Linz is the farm manager at Dallacy. Her office is a hop, skip, and a jump away from where the sheep are looked after. From her office window, I can see the pastures the livestock will roam once the weather gets warmer. And, she tells me, she's got a Dalhousie wool blanket at home to keep her warm during these chilly months.
We didn't used to do it every year because there wasn't enough call for the blankets, but yeah. Now, like, we sent it last year and she's asked for us to send the wool again this year. So it's pretty popular.
Linz compares the blankets to the Dalhousie's Barley Signet Ring. They're a signature piece to campus and community life. And so are the sheep.
So I'll just get you to put these boots on. So it's just for biosecurity that you don't take anything in.
Absolutely.
Or we you send anything out with you.
Sure, for sure.
The campus has approximately 60 sheep at a time, all currently being kept inside away from the cold. At one end of the building, the ewes are munching lazily on their hay. At the entrance Linz brings me through, I'm greeted with all the curious little lambs just born in November. The sheep only get sheared once a year. When that happens, a shearer from Prince Edward Island comes to campus, and students get to see how it's done. Then, the wool is packed up and taken back to PEI, to McCausland's Woolen Mills. Monica McCausland explains the blanket process from start to finish.
So we receive the raw wool, we grade the wool, we wash it, it gets dried and then carded and spun. From the spinning process for blankets, we cone it, take it out to the loom room for making the warp and the weft, and then the blankets are woven. Once the blankets are woven, we kind of inspect them, make sure the quality is there, wash the blankets, hung to dry, and then napped, which is what makes them soft and fluffy. We hem, and then we label them.
The Dalhousie has what it likes to call an Atlantic mandate. So keeping projects local is important to the students and staff, especially Wallace.
I think it's really important to support local industries. I know in Truro there was always the farmers market, which was kind of once a week you would have producers come in who would, whatever product, it could be meat, it could be cookies, it could be arts and crafts or whatever. And you know, A, you were going to get good value, but also as a consumer, it was the social aspect of it was incredible.
In the future, Wallace hopes his DIY knitting kits can also be a success. But until then, kicking back and counting sheep seems like a solid plan. For The Signal, I'm Kaylee Stevens in Truro.
Fun fact, Kaylee is actually allergic to wool.
Students of African descent often face barriers and hurdles in education. And that's true for those going into social work education. Bria Simons is one of the people trying to change that. She is creating a mentorship program for the Afrocentric Bachelor of Social Work at Dalhousie. It is the first ever program of its kind in Nova Scotia. Bria spoke to Dylan about it.
Hi, Bria. So why is mentorship important for this cohort?
It's important because, one, it's never been done before in the school of social work. And as someone that did their BSW at Dal several moons ago, I always say that it would have been nice to have a mentor outside of your face-to-face instructors. And with this cohort being a completely new cohort that just launched this year, I'm trying to find ways that add extra layers of support outside of myself as their program coordinator. So I thought having some other folks in the field that they want to go into would be helpful.
Gotcha. And how will this program work?
the mentorship program in general.
Yeah.
So with the BSW, this is a cohort that runs 3 years part-time. And they have a mixture of hybrid classes. They have a class that's in person for 1 weekend per month during the fall and winter terms, and then they have an online class as well. The mentorship program will work kind of similar to what we do at the Nova Scotia College of Social Workers. They'll be able to meet with their mentor virtually or in person, however they decide with that connection. And we're just making sure that they're meeting with their mentor a minimum of 1 hour per month, but a maximum could be 3 hours if they have capacity. It all really depends on how much time and availability both the mentee and the mentor have, and just where their connection is as well.
Gotcha. You alluded to this a little bit earlier, but what would having a program like this have meant to you during your own education?
Oh my gosh. I actually had this conversation last week at an event through the School of Social Work. We had Dr. Senator Wanda Bernard Thomas come and do a panel discussion with folks from my cohort and folks in her Afrocentric BSW class. And I had like a full circle moment because I was expressing about my time in the BSW classes when I had her as my instructor. And I was like, I was one out of three African descent folks, and there was only two of us that identify as African Nova Scotian, and for myself, identify as Afro-Indigenous. So that reality wasn't really reflected in the cohort of people that I went to school with. Majority of my peers were white students, and we're in a class where we're learning about Afrocentricity, and I felt that at that time, a lot of my peers were looking to me to kind of give them that education. But it's like, one, we're both paying thousands of dollars to be here. Two, you literally have Senator Wanda as your teacher. And three, it's like, it's not my responsibility to teach you, right? But it is your responsibility to be doing the work outside of this class, right? So having that full circle moment of, okay, why does it seem like, one, the limitation for me is happening here, even in my own course where I'm trying to learn and already have a seat at the table, and then having thoughts of, you know, it when you kind of have this idea of isolation in it almost, because it's just like you and your other black friend in a cohort of 90 other students, and you literally sit together all the time, you're over here. It's kind of like that book, like, why do all the black kids sit together, right? And we always used to say, we wish there was a cohort, or we wish there was an opportunity where people that looked like us were learning that we're learning and having more just comfortability. Mind you, that was like almost 3.5 years ago. Fast forward, we have a whole cohort now. So it's something that myself and my other peers to talk about that were feeling the way that we were feeling as African descent folks. It's a conversation about community because, mind you, this project for the program, it's funded by Dalhousie, but it's also funded by government and community. So it's like a three-partner coming together to be like, hey, this is what's happening. We need more black social workers, and let's make it happen. So people that think like it just happened overnight, like, no, it's been a long time coming, and I'm glad that we're here and that we're arrived to have it. So like, let's make more opportunities to sustain it.
Thank you so much, Bria. I really appreciate your time.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
That was Bria Simons. She is the coordinator for the Afrocentric Bachelor of Social Work program. Finally on the show today, joining a social coffee group every weekend can be relaxing. Joining a cold plunging group in the middle of winter is pretty cool, as in below zero cool. Darkside Dippers is the latest cold plunging group in Dartmouth. The Signal's Molly McNaughton took a dip.
It's Sunday. I'm at Lake Bannook in Dartmouth. It's cold, -1 to be exact. Windy, overcast. At one point, it starts to snow, but not for long. People are skating on the frozen lake. They're probably sweating underneath their warm jackets. Not too far away, near the shore by the canoe club, is Brandon Halef. He's gripping a sledgehammer.
We're breaking apart the ice to get ready for the community dip.
Small blocks of ice float near the shore. He's submerged in the water up to his hips. Pants tucked in his boots, he's soaking wet.
How cold are you right now?
Right now, not gonna lie, I have Raynaud's, bad circulation in my hands and toes. But other than that, I feel great, I feel alive, and I'm ready to get it.
Guys, hello, I'm Coco. If I messaged you, or if you got a message from the Dark Side Dippers, that was me, so thank you for coming.
I'm Coco McNeil. I just wanted to build a community where
every week people could come together, jump in the water, do something cold, and bond over something challenging.
Coco is 28. He moved to Dartmouth last year. He's the founder and creator of Darkside Dippers.
So the first week, the first Sunday of this month, we probably had four people dip into the water, including myself. Second week was last Sunday. We had about close to 40.
And this past Sunday, there were more than 50 dippers, including first-timer Janique Duga.
And so this is your first time, right?
Yes, this will be the first time.
And how are you feeling?
Nervous and cold.
How do you think it will go?
Cold. I hope that I don't bail out. It looks pretty freezing, but I'm optimistic it'll be good. I've seen videos of it on Facebook, and my coworker here, Ajal, has done it before, so she kind of encouraged me to take the plunge with her this time.
You also take cold showers.
Yeah, that's true. I do love cold water and being cold, so perfect opportunity to do that.
But Coco doesn't let people run into the water without a safety talk first. He also leads icebreaker games on the beach. That's a big part of the community aspect, making new friends.
So we'll go over super quick, an icebreaker, safety.
I don't just go in for an extreme sport, extreme thing to do. I keep in mind the mental and physical benefits that come from it. That's why I started. And so I used polar dips to kind of manage that.
With cold plunging after you get out, because no one likes to be in the cold. Come on, for real. Once you get out, the dopamine goes up 250%, and it sticks with you for 3 hours or more.
Mandy Morgan was born and raised in Halifax. She is the only certified Sherpa breath and cold guide in Nova Scotia.
That just basically means I can guide people through breathwork techniques and into the cold water safely and securely.
While many people took up knitting, baking, or maybe even gardening during the pandemic, Mandy started cold plunging for fun. She says it's all about listening to your body.
So you need to be attuned to how your body is feeling. And if it feels too cold or something hurts, then you just need to get out. So the research shows that you shouldn't do any more than 11 minutes a week, especially for women, because our bodies work much differently. Some people do much more, but they're making sure they're listening to their body and it actually is helping them more. Like, some people may be doing this for chronic pain.
My name is Brianna.
How are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling chilly. This will be my third time. So my first time it was in and out. Second time I did 13 seconds. So I think the goal every time is just to get to where you were before and then maybe push yourself a little farther.
Heck yeah, buddy!
Brianna was the last dipper of the day. She spent nearly 2 minutes in the water. I caught her on the way out.
How do you feel?
I feel good, way better than the last couple times I've done it, but definitely cold and ready to warm up.
Good job.
Coco dips every day, but Sundays are for everyone. Beginners or experts, Coco wants to bring people together.
Try it out. Once you do it, you'll be hooked.
I was scared, but Coco was so positive about cold plunging. I had to try it out. The water was freezing. But I definitely felt that rush of energy everyone was talking about, even though I couldn't feel my legs.
Yeah, I'm cold just watching you.
For The Signal, I'm Molly McNaughton in Halifax.
Coco McNeil says he plans on running the dips until May. If you're looking for more information, you can find him on Instagram at Darkside Dippers.
And that's our show for today.
If there's anything you want to hear again, we post links to our stories on Twitter and TikTok. Our handle is SignalHFX.
Thanks to our social media editors, Kaylee Stevens and Molly McNaughton.
A shout out to our technician, Mark Pinio, in the control room.
Our audio professor is Christina Harnett. I'm Kate Berrio.
And I'm Dylan Taylor. We'll be back next week with more stories. Have a great weekend.